We do appreciate the prayers for our family over the last couple of weeks. It has been a very trying period in our lives for a number of reasons. And so we do appreciate that and do pray the Lord will bless you for it, and are so very thankful today to be able to be in the Lord's house, to be behind the pulpit, knock off the rust a little bit. I can't remember the last time. It's been maybe 2 weeks since I preached, and so you forgive me this morning if it if there is too much rust, but you just pray the Lord would strengthen us and give us the words that we all stand in need of here today. Let us read Mark chapter 2, verse number 1. And again he entered into Capernaum after some days, and it was noised that he was in the house. And straightway many were gathered together, insomuch that there was no room to receive them, no, not so much as about the door. And he preached the word unto them. And they came unto him, bringing one sick of the palsy, which was born of four. And when they could not come nigh unto him for the press, they uncovered the roof where he was. When they had broken it up, they let down the bed wherein the sick of the palsy lay. When Jesus saw their faith, he said unto the sick of the palsy, Son, thy sins be forgiven thee. But there were certain of the scribes sitting there and reasoning in their hearts, Why doth this man thus speak blasphemous? Who can forgive sins but God only? And immediately when Jesus perceived in his spirit that they so reasoned within themselves, he said unto them, Why reason ye these things in your hearts? Whether is it easier to say to the sick of the palsy, Thy sins be forgiven thee, or to say, Arise and take up thy bed and walk? But that ye may know that the Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sins, he saith to the sick of the palsy, I say unto thee, Arise and take up thy bed, go thy way into thine house. And immediately he arose, took up the bed, and went forth before them all, insomuch that they were all amazed and glorified God, saying, We never saw it on this fashion. When you read this passage of Scripture, it is certainly a familiar story to us today. And by story, I mean a relaying of historical events that actually took place. What does it make you think of? What does it cause you to bring to mind? As I read through this and thought about this passage of Scripture, it made me step back and ask myself this question. What are we doing? I mean, what really are we doing? In our lives, in our ministry, in this time that God has given us to occupy this earth, with the talents, the abilities, the opportunities, the responsibilities, all the things that God has blessed us with and has given us, what really are we doing with those things? When you think of the setting of this passage of Scripture, Jesus Christ finds himself surrounded by a throng of people. The hand of God being so evidently, powerfully upon him that people gathered insomuch that there was not room to receive even one more into the midst. There was gathered here so many that desired to hear, so many that desired to listen, so many that desired to merely be in the presence of Christ. And then, of course, at the center of it all, we find Jesus Christ, the man with the message, the man with the power, doing a great and wonderful act of healing here. And as we weigh in the balance of comparison our lives and the things that we do, we ask ourselves, really, what are we doing? What are we doing with our time, with our opportunity? The life and the ministry of Jesus Christ is filled with extraordinary events. Events of healing, power, and glory. Yet as we examine them, and as we look at them, as we have this for an example before us this morning, we can't help but be overwhelmed. Be overwhelmed with His purpose, with His mission, with His aim, and the reality that His purpose, His mission, and His aim was not just to simply complete these acts. Wasn't just simply to act as a robot might, just simply to do right in order to be right. That's not the motivation of Christ in these things, or even simply because he was motivated or ordered to do so. The purpose, mission, and aim of Christ was and still is much, much more than that. Much, much more than that. It is all about glorifying God through the lives of men, women, boys, and girls. That's what Christ is about. That's what he is about in this passage of Scripture that we have before us. So pointedly points us to the fact that yes, Jesus Christ was in the place that God had ordained him to be, and yes, Jesus Christ was completing an act that God had ordained be completed. But don't think for a second that is the only thing that is going on here. Jesus Christ is fulfilling the will of the Father while making a difference in the lives of men, women, boys, and girls. And that's what he does throughout his whole ministry. And that's what he's still doing today. That's what the ministry of Christ is all about. That is, he is glorifying God by working in and through the lives of people. Working in healing. Working by saving, by loving, by forgiving, by blessing, by being an example, by encouraging. Working by leading and guiding, by teaching and instructing. By all of these things, Jesus Christ is fulfilling the will of the Father and being right, but at the same time, he is also having a great impact on the lives of those around him. Don't diminish that or overlook it. It's so easy for us to lose our way in this life, to get off track. So easy for us to forget that our lives, as we mimic and become like Christ, are to be in this same capacity, lived out to the betterment and the blessing of men, women, boys, and girls that surround us for the glory of God. For the glory of God. Taking again the passage before us, we have a great example to see the effect that Christ has upon men. That he uses his abilities, his power, his glory, his influence, his character, his love to the benefit of them as he has that opportunity during his life. In this, we don't see Christ as simply fulfilling an obligation or, as the phrase has come so strongly to our minds, doing right just to be right. That's not what Christ is about here. As he gathers to speak to these people, we see in verse number 3 that one was brought into his presence sick of the palsy. This man was paralyzed. He had no ability to function really on his own. He couldn't go out and take a walk in the woods. He couldn't chase his children if he has any. He couldn't go to work on Monday morning and put in 40-hour shift for the week. He could not enjoy the things of life that we take so much for granted. And because of that, his life was hardly worth the living. He didn't have much of anything at all. Anything that he got, he had to receive at the hand of others. We see he's brought in verse number 3, verse number 4, to be in the very presence of Christ. And then look down to verse number 11. What does Christ do for this man? What does he do here in verse number 11? I'll tell you what he does. He changes his life. He makes him completely and wholly new. Verse 11, he says, I say unto thee, rise, take up thy bed, and go thy way into thine house. And immediately he arose, took up the bed, and went forth before them all. We see that in a moment, in an instant, his life changed. In this moment, in this instant, when he was able to rise up off of that cot that he had been carried in on, and he took it up and began to walk his way and go his way, what do you think the motivation of Christ was all about? What do you think motivated Christ to heal his body in this moment? I mean, think about it. No doubt there were examples. No doubt there was power displayed. No doubt there was glory to be had because of what had been done. I understand all of that. But I mean, for this man in particular, what was Christ's motivation? To change his life. To make it better. To provide a need. To fix a problem. To be a blessing. To make something better in life more easier. And on we could go. That was the purpose. That was his motivation. Some might say, with salvation. Well, back up to verse number 5. You see here in verse number 5, when Jesus saw their faith, he said unto the sick of the palsy, Son, thy sins be forgiven thee. What Christ did for this man at the end of this passage in verse 11 and 12 had nothing to do with salvation. For his sins had already been forgiven. It had nothing to do with that at all. It had everything to do with giving this man the things he needed to function in life, to change his life, to leave that moment that he had with Christ a changed and different man. Christ spent his ministry changing lives in this way. And we know that it all works together for the glory of God. That was his purpose. But we see he had a heart, he had a desire to change the lives of people, to be used in this way. And he does it here, as he made a new man out of him. We see he even further has an effect upon the Pharisees as they see this happen. The scribes and the Pharisees, they accuse him of blasphemy. They accuse him of saying that he could forgive sins. They didn't understand he was God himself. But notice, in response to that, in verse number 12, and immediately he arose, took up the bed, went forth before them all. Now notice this part, insomuch that they, now I admit that the they here could encompass all of the house, but in its strictest context, he was speaking to the Pharisees last, or the scribes and the Pharisees, that group that were calling him out for what he had said and done. And notice here the effect that he has on them. They were amazed, glorified God, saying, we never saw it on this fashion. They had never seen it this way before. In other words, they were, in place of only seeing the letter of the law, now beginning to see grace. Now beginning to see the spirit of law. Now beginning to see Christ as more than just fulfilling the rules and regulations of religion. They'd never seen it on this fashion before. Christ had an impact on these lives. As I examine this passage and I ask myself, what are we doing with our lives and our opportunity? Sadly, the answer comes back sometimes that we're so busy doing right just to be right that we fail to have an impact on the lives of those around us. Sometimes that really keeps us from fulfilling our greatest purpose upon this earth and becoming like Christ and glorifying Christ. But there is another reason yet that returns to mind as to why we fail many times to take advantage of these things. Sometimes the opposite is true. We look at examples like this in comparison and we say, he healed a man. He made him walk. How could I ever do anything that is even close to that? We read the Old Testament. And we see how that David, with a slingshot and some faith, killed a giant. We read about how Daniel, so taken with God in prayer, that he had to stare down some lions. Look him in the eye all night long. We read further about three Hebrew children who had to walk through the fires and flames of persecution. But in it they found fellowship with Jesus Christ. Could we ever hope to exhibit such faith? Could we ever hope to accomplish such a great physical feat as defeating a giant? What is my life in comparison to that? On top of this, we know that Moses parted the Red Sea. Joshua commanded the sun and it stood still. John, the great apostle and writer of a few books in the New Testament, was exiled for his faith. And don't even get us started on Paul. Well, how convicting it is to read of Paul and how his life was so dedicated unto the ministry that he was willing to give his body to the persecutors over and over again. What a convicting thought. Our lives by comparison can look very small. So unimportant. So the question is, what can we do? Sometimes we're so worried about being right or doing right that we lose sight of having an impact on people. Sometimes we look at what other people have done, whether it be in the Bible or, you know, some of the people throughout history that God has used to affect millions. And we think, what am I? I'm insignificant. What am I and what can I do? By comparison, we are so small and insignificant. So I ask you the question this morning to answer both of those things that I've brought to your mind. What can we do? What can we do? Or what should we be doing? The simple answer this morning is we just need to grab a corner. We just need to grab a corner. We're not to be robots doing right just to be right. And we also can't be overwhelmed with the great acts of others to the point that we want to quit and not even try. We need to grab a corner. We need to grab the corner that's right in front of us. We need to grab the corner that presents itself to us today. We need to empty our hands of the doubts and the fears and the cares of life. We need to empty our hands of the busyness and the vanity. We need to empty our hands of the things that really don't matter. And just simply grab a corner. And it may not sound like much. It may not sound like much. In fact, it may sound small and insignificant. It may sound like it's even beneath you or me. It may sound perhaps to some like it's hard work and perhaps not worth it. It may sound unappealing, but let us be resolved this morning to grab a corner. What do we mean by that? What do we mean by grab a corner? Look back in our text here to verse number 3. Christ is in this house. He's teaching and preaching. There's so many people surrounding Him that He can't even get in the door. Windows are all blocked. The entries and the exits are so overcome with people, it's impossible. Piling in. Verse number 3, and they came unto Him bringing one sick of the palsy which was born afore. Which was born afore. Of all the people in this passage of Scripture, the throngs, the Pharisees, the scribes, Christ Himself, of all the people that are pointed out the great miracle that takes place, these four are almost just, a secondary thought. These four are not listed among the heroes of faith in Hebrews 11. These four are not remembered by us for great acts of bravery or admired for touching or for blessing millions and millions of lives. They're not credited with great acts of faith or bravery, but one thing is clear from this passage that this man owes the change in his life to these four men. You say, but wait a minute, Christ is the one that healed him. Yes, I know. But you know what? These four men were willing to grab a corner. They were willing to grab a corner. They weren't so busy being right just to be right that they didn't see the need that was right in front of them. And they were willing to grab a corner and carry this man. They weren't too worried about saying, oh, that's a small and insignificant task. I need something much larger. With a greater impact. I need to be seen of many, or I need to reach many. No, these four men, each individually said, yes, I'm going to grab that corner. And we're going to make a difference. We're going to be a blessing. We're going to show Christ unto this man by taking this man to Jesus Christ. We know he was a paralytic man that could not move. Taken to Christ only upon his cot or upon his bed, they grabbed a corner. They carried him to Christ. What a wonderful picture of what you and I need to be doing today. We need to be all about grabbing the corner, doing whatever is in front of us, helping whomever is in front of us to come to Christ in any way that we can. It may have been such a small thing in comparison to slaying giants and spending time in the dens of lions, to walking in the fires of Nebuchadnezzar's furnace. It may be small in comparison to all the churches that Paul started in the ministry of the Apostle John laying on the breast of Christ. It may be insignificant and small to all of those things, but to this man, it was everything. And that's where we see Christ in them. To this man, it was everything that these men were willing to simply grab a corner, carry him to Christ. We need to be like that. Too often, we are either so focused on just being right for the sake of being right, or we're too discouraged with our insignificance. We overlook the impact. We overlook what we can do right now, in this moment, today, in our lives, to carry a corner, to be a blessing, to show Christ, or to take people to Christ. Don't worry about the masses. Don't worry about those that are out there in the world, and they seem to be reaching hundreds and thousands or more. Worry about the one. Worry about the next one. Worry about the one that God brings into your life. Worry about the ones that are already there. And be willing to grab a corner of their cot and carry them. Meet the need that is present in their life to the glory of God. We need to be willing to do that. We need to desire to do that to His honor and to His glory. Being willing to care about those who no one else cares about, that God sends into our life. Being willing to do the work that no one else wants to do. Being willing to sacrifice when nobody else wants to sacrifice. We're constantly surrounded by corners that need to be grabbed. Need to be lifted up and carried. And you know what? Your name will never be in the newspaper. Won't be remembered, perhaps, by anyone after you're gone. Except, perhaps, by that one. Do you think that this man ever forgot those four men that took him to Christ? Do you think that they ever did? That they were ever forgotten by him? That it was ever overlooked or it was ever pushed aside? No, this man spent his entire life, no doubt in thanksgiving, that those four men were willing one day to grab a corner. We don't know who they were. They might have been family. Don't discount it because they were family. We're surrounded by our families every day. I know I am. I'm surrounded by my family every single day. And I need to be ready and willing to grab a corner, even though it seems insignificant. I need to be ready and willing to carry them to Christ. And you know what? It's often a thankless job. It is. Often it's a thankless job. It's hard. And often we wonder, are we doing enough just by simply grabbing this corner today? The answer is, in that moment, yes, you are. The next moment, grab it again and carry on. Do that which takes them to Christ, shows Christ to others in this world. Have an effect on everyone around us. That needs to be what we're about. It needs to be what we are focused on, what we are striving to do. Take this as an example and as a lesson and grab a corner and be a part. Be a part of how Christ, how the Lord works in changing lives, in working in the hearts of people. How does that look in our lives? Sometimes that looks like a whole lot of prayer. Grab a corner. Carry people to Christ or to the Lord in prayer through Christ. What does that look like? Sometimes it looks like a word of encouragement. Grab a corner and encourage. Grab a corner and provide a meal. Grab a corner and do whatever you can to be a blessing. Sometimes it looks like setting a good example with your own faithfulness in life. Sometimes it looks like something more involved and something that's going to get your hands dirty and cost you more work. But you know what? We got to be willing to do it. Often we get so worried about reaching the world that we don't worry about reaching the ones that are closest, right here. We need to be all about grabbing a corner. Those men could have looked and they could have saw the throng surrounding Christ and they could have said, look at how much is going on, how much light is there. Let's get in there, hear what He has to say, and let's attend this worship service. And you know what? Nobody could have faulted them for that. Is that right? That they would have wanted to be in the presence of Christ? Is that right? That they would have wanted to attend and be at this meeting? Yes. And if they were only concerned about doing right to be right, that's what they would have done. But no. No. The Lord brought one into their life. And they chose to grab a corner and take Him to Christ. And what a difference it made. Aren't you glad that as you look back over the course of your life, that people have been used of God, if nothing more than you just simply grab a corner and carry you for a while? Carry you when you're at your weakest. Carry you when you don't know where to go next. Carry you when you can't go it alone. Carry you to Christ and find that spiritual strengthening you might need to take care of the problems of life. Oh, how we need to be like these four men. Simply grab a corner. Don't worry about the masses. Don't worry about the big complexities. Don't worry about all of those things. Let's worry about right here. Let's worry about in our lives. Let's grab a corner. Move towards Christ with those that He brings into our lives. In closing, turn over to chapter 14 of Mark. Here's another example. Mark chapter 14, and read with me here in verse number 6. Well, let's go back to verse number 3, excuse me. And being in Bethany, in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at meat, there came a woman having an alabaster box of ointment, of spikenard, very precious. She broke the box and poured it on his head. You know, in some ways, this seems like a very small thing. Now, I know that the ointment was expensive. It was a valuable thing. But in the realm of she comes and she breaks the box, the next day, who's really going to notice? Who's really going to remember? If you're only looking at the physical aspect of what she does, it doesn't seem like it's all that much. It doesn't seem like it's that big. And that's how some of the apostles approach it. They think it's a waste. Say, why has this been done? Why didn't she sell it and donate it to the poor? And if this woman was worried about doing right to simply be right, that's what she would have done. That's what she would have done. If this woman was overwhelmed with thinking about all the great acts of faith that her ancestors had done and she had been told about through the writings of the Old Testament, she would have left this box at home. And she would have thought, you know what? That's too small of a thing. Who's going to care about that? What is that in comparison to all the other things I've ever heard done? But you know what? She doesn't take either route. She brings her most prized possession. She breaks it, anoints the head of Christ. And we see here in verse number 6, and Jesus said, let her alone. Why trouble ye her? She hath wrought a good work on me. For ye have the poor with you always. And whensoever ye will, ye may do them good. But me ye have not always. She hath done what she could, and has come aforehand to anoint my body to the burying. Verily I say unto you, whosoever this gospel shall, or wheresoever this gospel shall be preached throughout the whole world, this also that she hath done shall be spoken of for a memorial of her. When the gospel is preached, this woman is remembered because of what she had done, not because it was a stupendous act physically. Christ says, because she did what she could. We get so bogged down with what we can't do. We get so overwhelmed with perhaps even what we should do, that we lose sight of what we can do. for the Lord, for others in our lives, to be used, to be a blessing, to be an outpouring of His character, and to continue His work. She was not worried about all of these things. What she did was an amazing act of sacrifice that affected the lives of many. But you know what? At that moment, she was only concerned with affecting one man, Jesus Christ. And that's what we need to be concerned about. Be concerned about affecting one man, one woman, one boy and one girl for or on behalf of Jesus Christ as if He was there in the flesh Himself. You know what? You don't have to sacrifice doctrine to do it. You don't have to sacrifice or compromise what the Bible teaches or preaches to do it. Christ did it, so can we. So can we. Let's grab a corner. How are we going to move hearts and minds towards Christ today? We think of it so much on a national level, America this and America that, and it's tragic. And I agree with all of that. I've said all of that. And I know all of that. But instead of that, let's bring that sphere down a little bit. How are we going to move hearts and minds toward Christ in our homes? It gets a little more personal. How are we going to move hearts and minds toward Christ in our jobs? In our extended families, within our friendships and acquaintances? How are we going to move hearts and minds towards Christ? The only way you're ever going to do it is by grabbing a corner. One corner at a time. How can we, like the apostles did in Jerusalem, turn the world upside down? One corner at a time. One cot at a time, one sinner at a time, one job at a time, one moment, one day at a time. It's the only way that we can accomplish that which Christ has called us to do. If we're unwilling to grab the corner in our homes where our families need us the most, how are they going to see Christ if it's not through mom and dad? If it's not through grandma and grandpa, if it's not through whomever's in that home to influence them, how are they going to see and how are their minds and hearts going to be turned towards Christ? And you're not going to do it by one act at one moment. You're going to do it by day after day grabbing a corner and carrying them towards Christ. Seeing the need that is present in their life and doing whatever you can to fill that need spiritually, emotionally, physically showing them Christ. Here's the thought that we'll conclude with. What if the true measure of our lives, and rest assured our lives will be measured. Those of us that are saved will stand before the judgment seat of Christ after we're taken out of this world. And our lives will be measured. And that measuring stick will be Christ. We will stand before Him and our lives will be taken account of. And what if the true measure of our lives at that time is not taken in hours logged in a pew? What if it's not measured in the number of times that we have read the Gospels or the number of times that we have prayed, or the number of times we have done this or that. Not advocating quitting doing those things. But what if the true measure isn't about the statistics? What if the true measure isn't about how many times we have been right and others have been wrong? What if the greatest measure of our lives is instead taken in how we have affected the people around us? Think about it. What if the true measure of your life, when you look Christ in the eye, and your life is weighed in the balance, not for salvation, that is taken care of. Of course, we know. Guaranteed. But what if the measure of our life is in the effect we have had on those that God has brought into our lives? And how we have noticed and been able to meet the needs of those that God has brought into our lives, that He has given us influence over. A lot of times I guess I spend time thinking about or maybe worried about how to reach people, how to touch people, how to have an effect on people I don't have influence over, that I don't have contact with. We need to be worried about those that we do. What if the true measure of our life is in how we have done that? Measured in the way that we have blessed their lives for the glory of God, not to ours. In the way that we have emulated Christ as He shows in this passage of Mark 2, His care for this man. His desire to change his life so that he might serve Him the better. How we have impacted the lives of men, women, boys and girls for the glory of the Father. I mean, just think about that question. I believe that will be the true measure of our lives as we stand before Christ. There will be a reward for being right, that's true. But I believe even greater for influencing, being a blessing to those around us for Christ. And in the end, this is the greatest use of our lives and time here upon the earth. So let us not get so focused on simply being right that we lose the ability to grab the corner and carry someone to Christ.